Well, President Obama spoke last night before Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak made what many thought would be his resignation speech.
What is absolutely clear is that we are witnessing history unfold. It's a moment of transformation that's taking place because the people of Egypt are calling for change.
Joining us now, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. David, is this a moment of embarrassment for the United States? Did we get surprised?
Well, if you listened, Celeste, to the director of the Central Intelligence as he was doing testimony on the annual threat assessment in Congress, it certainly seemed that way because Leon Panetta said that he fully expected that, or at least said it was very likely, that President Mubarak would resign by the end of the day, or at least there'd be a significant transfer of power. Now, it seems as if he was basing that more on the TV reports we were all watching than any secret reports that are coming back to Washington. But I think it is clear that everyone, including the president, expected something more of President Mubarak yesterday.
Well, let me kind of assess for you the U.S. foreign policy. I mean, is it clear to assume that the United States, Hillary Clinton and the Secretary of State's office is being very active behind the scenes and then trying to be more cautious publicly?
Well, certainly that is the indication that we have gotten, but active toward what end? President Obama has made it very clear that he wanted to move away from that era where the United States meddled in the Middle East or replaced leaders in the Middle East. And you may recall it's only just about 8 years next month since we last replaced a leader in the Middle East, Saddam Hussein. So the president has said repeatedly in public and has said to his staff, this is for the Egyptian people to decide. At the same time, the U.S. does not have an interest in this going on for a very, very long time. And so it is constantly balancing President Obama's clear desire to associate himself with the protesters and the clear caution that they don't want to start a process here that results in chaos and gives openings for Islamic extremists or others to sort of, as Secretary Clinton said, hijack the process. So I think their hearts are with the protesters. Their briefing books are clearly in the camp of caution.
I would assume that our policy would have to change of the American government should there actually be violence, should the military in Egypt focus their fire on the protesters, should people start dying.
Well, that's my assumption as well, that if the military turned against the protesters, that would change the calculation. So far, the military has tried to stay pretty neutral, but about 90 minutes ago, we heard the military say that they were backing the approach that President Mubarak was taking, which was to transfer most of his powers to Vice President Suleiman, the former intelligence chief. And it also said that it would back lifting the emergency laws, but only if the protesters left the square. Well, if the protesters leave, that then lifts all of the pressure on President Mubarak. So the U.S. is in the odd position of wanting to see the protests continue because it's the main form of pressure, but not wanting to see it get out of hand. And that's largely beyond our control.
Well, let me ask you about the Vice President, Omar Suleiman, who, as I understand, has been working with the United States in terms of trying to approach and negotiate with opposition groups in Egypt. And we have some reports that Omar Suleiman was picked by some people in Washington as a possible successor to Mubarak, should Mubarak leave. And at this point, we're hearing, we just spoke to an Egyptian-American professor, Nancy Youssef, and other protests saying, especially after Suleiman's speech last night, telling the people to go home, that he is not acceptable to them. Where does this leave Washington?
I think it is, it's not quite accurate to say that Washington picked Suleiman for anything. They know Suleiman very well. Vice President Biden dealt with him a lot when he was intelligence chief. Obviously, the intelligence agencies have as well, and they consider him a pretty reliable partner. But there's no question that over the past week, Mr. Suleiman has made it clear that he does not plan to be a neutral arbiter here. He has sided completely with President Mubarak, who raised him through the government ranks over these many years. So to the protesters, it's not at all clear that Mr. Suleiman represents any significant change from Mubarak. And it's not clear to Washington that Mr. Suleiman is running a process here that would truly allow the opposition, which is somewhat leaderless, we'd have to say right away, to get involved as a full partner in setting deadlines, in picking who it is who would suggest revisions to the Constitution. In fact, it was President Mubarak who picked that panel for constitutional revisions, and he stuffed it mostly with judges loyal to him.
Okay, so is there a point? I mean, we had Mohamed al-Barde saying that the Egyptian army must turn around, but he also called on the U.S. government to support the transition. I mean, is there a point at which the U.S. government or Barack Obama will have to be more decisive?
It could well come to that. I think that the president is approaching the point where he's going to have to decide whether he can still stand off and say it's up to the Egyptian people to decide whether Mubarak leaves. And that's the toughest decision ahead, and it may depend entirely on whether or not this turns violent.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, thank you so much.
Thank you, Celeste.
We're asking you what you would do if you were in Barack Obama's shoes, if you were Hillary Clinton, if you were in charge of U.S. foreign policy, what would you be saying this morning? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.